ago when I joined at the very beginning of this august group, the MBTA, I never thought I'd be chairing the meeting, but Phyllis Randall is unable to be with us tonight, so here we go. And I look forward to it, and I appreciate the ability, the opportunity to work with Let me go ahead and call the meeting of the MBTA to order and ask the speaker to call the roll.
Sure. Chair Randall, Mayor Parrish.
Here.
Supervisor Alcom.
Here.
Chair Wheeler.
Here.
Councilmember Snyder.
Here.
Board Member Crystal.
Here.
Mayor Meyer.
Here.
Mayor Wilson.
Here.
Mayor Rochelle.
Here.
Mayor Wood.
Present.
Ms. Hines.
Here.
Mr. Cove.
Here.
Ms. Crevel.
Here.
Mr. Horsley.
Here.
Chair, we have a quorum.
We have a quorum.
Yes.
Let's move on quickly to item three, which are the minutes from the February 13th meeting, and they are in the packet. Is there a motion? Mm-hmm. We have a motion for approval of the minutes, and made by Ms. Hines, seconded by Mr. Wilson.
Chair Parrish, I abstain. I was not here last time.
Okay, we will have one abstention. Second abstention.
Third
abstention. That's we do have enough to vote. Any further discussion? Seeing and hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? That motion carries almost unanimously, but with a couple of abstentions. Thank you very much. That moves us along to our action item. Item number four is to authorize revised public release date of March 13, 2020 for projects under funding consideration for the FY 2025 6-year update.
Good news. Thank you, Mayor Parrish. So at your February 13th meeting, the authority approved May 14th as the public hearing date for the projects under consideration for funding for the FY 2020 to 2025 6-year program. And you authorized the release of the documents for the public comment period and the start of the public comment period for April the 17th, which would have been the day after your April meeting date. And that public comment period would end on 11:59 p.m. on May the 24th. Because the documents and the materials are ready for release, staff proposes that you give the public a longer opportunity to provide comment. So instead of waiting until next month to release the documents for public comment, we're asking that you release the materials 11:59 p.m. tonight, or if you may want to say tomorrow, for public comment, keeping the same end date of May 24th at 11:59 p.m. So that way we'll give the public a little more time. What is included with the release is the project list, the map of the project, the detailed quantitative and qualitative analysis, including the project rankings and associated ranks, individual project description forms, and we do have some on hand for anyone that so chooses to take a look during the meeting, but we have all of that material. Also, we are ready to go regarding the receipt of public comments. We will have an email address for respondents to submit comments through, to accept written comments. We have a page that's created and will go live tomorrow morning. And this page will include details about the public comment period, the public hearing, and the open house, and things of that nature. We also have posted to our website, the main authority website, under the program tab. You can find all of the data and materials associated with the public comment period. We are preparing to release the press release, the legal ad. We've also coordinated shuttle services with Fairfax County Department of Transportation for the public hearing, as Fairfax so kindly does every time we have a public hearing to get from the Don Loring station here and back. And we are doing the fifth video series update. We're doing video updates of where we are in the process. The one thing I do want to note, we are having some local jurisdiction briefings and town hall meetings. These are voluntary, so if a locality asks us to come and present regarding the 6-year program update, we would be happy to do so.
Okay, very good. Is there a motion? Actually, I don't think you need a motion.
I do, because it's Because the, right now, we will release on April 17th, so we're asking you to release it tomorrow.
Mr. Chair, I move with our authorization of the revised date of March 13th for release and intended as a project under funding consideration. Also, by 20 to 25 six-year program related.
Second.
And we have a motion and a second. For that motion, any discussion? Any further discussion? Seeing and hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? That motion carries unanimously. Thank you, Mr. Wilson, Mr. Michelle. Let me take, what I'd like to do is take up 5, 6, and 7, much like we did during the Finance Committee meeting. Just a couple of comments with regard to the Finance Committee. Jeff was there as well as Chair Randall as well. During that finance discussion, we had a substantial discussion about all three of these budgets. And at that time, we took up each of those three budgets together and then made individual motions with regard to that. And I'd like to do the same thing tonight. And in fact, let me just cover part of my Finance Committee report to you right now. The committee did receive and reviewed a detailed budget and made a recommendation to approve. With some substantial future understanding of additional revenues and with regard to the local distribution fund budget, the same thing occurred. There was substantial discussion and ultimately a unanimous recommendation to approve to this body, as well as the operating budget. There was some discussion within the operating budget as well about certain things that were in which we can go over. We'll call on Mr. Long.
Thank you, Mayor Parrish, authority members. For the proposed regional revenue fund budget for FY21, my list background, I'll just go into a little detail that the Finance Committee will receive a briefing and with two policy updates to implement the two additional funding lines that were included in the General Assembly session. That will be in April, and will then go to the authority for a approval in May, as will updated revenue projections, and then the most important thing, which everybody's looking for, the PAYGO analysis, which actually says how much of this money will be in the two-year update to the six-year plan. The finance team will be taking the next couple of weeks to kind of perfect those numbers. With that, I will go to the attachment on the budget and just walk that through. The far right column has notes that tie into the staff report, and I'll just kind of work down through there. We did blue sheet this, but I had a little bit of a version control on the table. The blue sheet doesn't change anything. It's in staff report. I have an older copy of the table that I put a few days before. Working from the top end, our two revenues right now are sales tax and the truck registration and road use tax, also known as the IE1 revenues. Again, remember, these are 70% of the total revenue for the regional revenue funds. We are planning on the truck registration and road use being approximately $2.5 million as opposed to the $9.4 million projected by the state. Although there is an update, I think going next week to the CQB, did have conversations with the VDOT CFO, and they have recognized some transaction issues. They have recognized some posting issues, and they said their projections were off basically 10%. And she and I had a conversation where the trend is actually off 68%. So clearly there's some additional work that I'm looking forward to getting a briefing on. Hopefully the timing for this will allow the most accurate numbers to be included in the revenue projections. Moving down, you see something kind of strange for a revenue category, and that's a $35 million credit. To try to briefly explain that credit, the authority, when it adopted the six-year program, forward-funded a huge amount of projects. If you flip over to the second page, attachment 2, We did a lot of work for the newer members. We did a lot of work with our auditor to make sure that the authority, rather than issuing debt, could use the strength of our balance sheet to forward commit revenue, knowing that projects take a very long time to spend out. Doing that strategy actually saves the authority $194 million. And it also shows anybody who reads our financial statements that those revenues are very strongly committed as far as future projects. So each year, each fiscal year, we go through an appropriation cycle to appropriate the projects, funds for the projects that need money that year. The reason we have a credit, I guess most graphically presented to you, is if you look at the far right column on attachment to schedule FY23, the project funding amounts in there that have a shading to them are projects that have said, we want to move further down the schedule. A lot of that happened when we implemented Policy 29, which requires progress to occur after appropriation. So that's why we have that kind of strange-looking $35 million credit. Next item below that is the portfolio interest earnings. Needless to say, we've gone from a bull market to a bear market. Treasuries will be examining that number as well. It's a proposition on the program. The next two items down in the expenditure section are the debt service payments, $160,000 for technical services for long-term benefits and other things for the planning staff. Then the $163 million actually matches the scheduled appropriations for 21. That number will change as well and will work its way to financing and to the authority. Moving further down, 6A in the note column is the operating budget transfer. So that's one of the reasons why Mayor Parrish, I think, took the strategy of reading the three budgets and then going back and taking the voting action. The $38 million is money that will get moved into project appropriations for future years as part of the PAYGO recommendation. And then the last section there is reserves, which we're proposing no changes to because of the funding. So with that, I guess the real note here is stay tuned, there'll be more to follow. But this at least allows our business processes to keep moving forward.
Mike, we need to move forward with this, but there will be some changes, as you mentioned it several times. When do you expect that those changes might be taken up by the authority?
I think in May. So go to finance in April and then the authority in May.
Very good. We'll take a motion after we continue the discussion about the other two budgets, if that's okay.
The next budget is the local distribution fund budget, the 30% budget. I'll just flip straight over to the table on the second page of the staff report. You notice this budget has a zero carry forward because we disperse all of this money every fiscal year. It also has a zero budget balance because we would obviously propose dispersing all of this money for fiscal 21. If I can draw your attention to section 5, the assumptions, C. This is wording we've worked out again with our auditors to note that all prior fiscal year accruals and Commonwealth revenue adjustments of the local distribution fund will be distributed to the appropriate jurisdiction in 2021 in accordance with the Code of Virginia. What this allows us to do is to give to the nine jurisdictions the money that actually comes in without having to come back to the board for revenue adjustments for the next course of the year. So the 30% is pretty simple. It comes in, you take 30% off, give it to you. The last budget is a little bit more complicated. Like the regional revenue fund, the operating budget we have tied with notes to the staff report. The finance committee got to observe each line one at a time. I've gotten the hint that maybe that doesn't need to be done and you're talking about that. So I will just go through some highlights. If you look about mid part of the attached table, you see budget notes starting at 1 and going to 20. Those are for the base budget. Those are changes in the base budget. Then we have some initiatives that we'll discuss in the next column to the right that also has got notes tied to it. So I'm just going to speak off the note section. So looking first at note 6, we see a decrease in the public outreach line. That's because we had a one-time expense of $20,000 for the economic analysis that was done that year, and was offset by some changes. Note 7, legal services bond counsels also going down $15,000. The only thing that we're currently paying out of that is bond counsel fees, and our experience has shown that we can turn back $15,000 back. Moving down to item 10, the general ledger system. The jump in that is because of the Bloomberg systems that the authority passed, allowing us to do a better job in managing the investment programs and all of the services that were behind that. 13, GIS project monitoring and management. That one went down again as well because of one-time costs related to the PIMS project information monitoring and management system. 18, office lease. We actually decreased our office lease cost to renegotiate the lease. It was just time to renegotiate it. But we were able to make a $17,000 reduction at the same time, adding 3 offices. Had we not been able to renegotiate the lease, that would have been about $38,000 increase. So that's the base, my summary of the base budget. If there's any questions,
Yes, sir, Mr. Joplin. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a question on 23, the PIM system. So how long has that been in place? How long has that been operational?
It was just turned operational this year.
Okay, and my question is, are we ready to start talking about enhancements for that? We have enough experience with it yet.
Yes, we've gotten a lot of feedback from the jurisdictions. You're actually jumping ahead.
Okay.
But we've gotten a lot of feedback from the jurisdictions on these enhancements. we're looking at $95,000 in enhancements, all of it being one-time costs, much of it being kind of lessons learned as we develop the first 2 phases of the system.
And this does connect back to the GIS as well, somehow.
Yeah, the licensing for the GIS is when we hired the additional planning staff last year, we weren't quite sure what skills we were going to be able to hire. So it turns out we were able to hire very good ones. And we are using a shared licensing. So you actually can have 2 people sign on, but only one can use it concurrently. So we want to move past that and get additional licenses. So of that $14,000 cost, $11,000 of it is one time. The rest of it will be annual, the licenses.
Is that a master license?
That's a big part of it, yes.
Yeah. And you can only use those concurrently, but we can't use those concurrently.
The way we're buying them, no. The way we bought them in the past, no.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
The one enhancement we didn't touch was item 21, which is public outreach, $12,000. This will all be repetitive each year, so this will increase the base. That's driven by the items in the sub bullet, but part of it is storage for FOIA requests on social media stuff. A lot of it is actually helping our communications and public affairs manager be more productive in their job by automating some of the tasks that she currently has to do by hand. And with that,
let's get there. Are any other questions or any other questions you'd like to for the moment, the operator, but let's just talk about that for just a moment. Let me point out item 22, there was some discussion, a fairly substantial amount of discussion about item 22 regarding the operating budget at the Finance Committee, and it was determined after that discussion to hold off on that and not add that to the budget this year, and that was to procure outside legal services. Okay, we do need a separate motion on all 3 of the budgets. First one is the regional revenue budget, and let me see if I have the appropriate motion would be. Looks like Mr. Murphy might be looking at it, but the appropriate motion would be to move adoption of the proposed 2021 regional revenue fund budget. Shown on the attachment. Is there a motion?
So moved.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion by Mr. Wilson, seconded by Ms. Crystal. Any discussion? Any discussion? Seeing and hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? That motion for the regional revenue budget carries unanimously and moves us along to our local revenue budget. A similar kind of motion could be made.
Mr. Chair, I move the adoption of the FY 2021 local distribution fund budget as presented.
Second. Okay, we have a motion by Mr. Wilson, seconded by Mr. Alcorn. Any discussion? Seeing and hearing no discussion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? That motion carries unanimously. That moves us to our operating budget.
Mr. Chair,
thank you.
I move through the authority adopt proposed fiscal 2021 operating budget as presented in attached proposal.
Okay,
second.
Is there a second? Okay, very
can I
good.
Speak to this briefly?
Yeah, please.
Thank you.
Please.
I just wanted to say as a member of the Finance Committee, I appreciate Mr. Longy not providing the same level of detail, but I do want to say how much that level of detail was in fact appreciated. And some of the enhancements that we will see this year, I think, will serve the authority and our projects and the region well. Mr. Alcorn teased out a couple with regard to the GIS, the project monitoring and modeling. I know that there's also a modest amount of additional funds for greater public outreach, which is incredibly important, especially in a coming update year. And part of that ongoing conversation about the legal counsel in particular and how we can best make sure the interests of the authority and its projects are well served. And commend the finance staff in particular for putting together what I found to be a very thoughtful budget.
As you might imagine, I agree with every word. Ms. Crystal made the motion, Mr. Wilson seconded the motion. Any further discussion? Seeing and hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? That motion carries unanimously as well. Great work, everyone. Thank you very much. That does lead us to the next item on the agenda. Item number eight, thank you, Mr. Longy. Item number eight is the approval of the appointees for technical advisory committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So it is about that time where we ask you to approve recommended appointees to your technical advisory committee. Your technical advisory committee is one of your two statutory committees that's required by your enabling legislation. You currently, and let me take a step back, the technical advisory committee is a 9-member committee that's comprised of individuals who reside or are employed in counties and cities embraced by the authority, and they have experience in transportation planning, finance, engineering, construction, or management. At this current time, we have 5 vacancies on the technical advisory committee, and the law states that the authority gets to appoint 6 people, 2 of the 9, and the Commonwealth Transportation Board chair appoints 3. Of the 5, 3 of the vacancies are to be appointed by the authority. So after lengthy discussions with your regional, with the Regional Jurisdiction Agency Coordinating Committee, we did vet 9 resumes that were submitted regarding people who had shown interest. We asked the JACs to go through a discussion and vetting process. So in your packet, 3 individuals were recommended to be appointed. Ms. Karen Chamberlain, Ms. Amy Morris, and Mr. Frank Spielberg. Their resumes are included in the packet. Karen is they're all private sector or mix of private and public sector. Karen, she's land use and transportation planning. Frank Spielberg, I think he's retired, but his specialty and expertise was in public transportation and travel forecasting, and then Amy Morris, transportation and traffic engineer. If once you make the appointments, assuming you do so tonight, there are still 2 vacancies. We are in contact with the secretary's office. I do understand this is really low priority for her, given everything else that's going on, but we are coordinating with her office and working with Ms. Hines to try to get those last 2 positions filled as well.
Okay, very good. I can't say that I read every word in those resumes, but they are outstanding resumes. Ms. Christian, please.
Perhaps this might be from Ms. Hines. Do we know that the Commonwealth Transportation Board and Secretary have candidates in mind, or do we know of candidates who applied and weren't selected? We 3 that we think might otherwise be excellent. May we forward them on to you?
You can certainly forward them to me. I don't know if Monica.
Well, I did. So I forwarded all 9 resumes to Nick Donahue, and I said, now the authority will probably make selections from these, so I'll probably send 6 resumes. So we have been having that. Communication.
Thank you. And then the only other question I had is I know we've been gathering resumes for some time. Have we confirmed that the three who we are voting on tonight are prepared to serve?
Yes, they've all actually contacted us, and we did hear from some committee members on the RJAC stating they are very interested and have been waiting to serve.
Mr. Chairman, I just know that the first person's name is Ms. Falcon.
Oh, thank you.
So for the candidates that you're looking for, can they either be people who are in my staff?
So, you know, the law is very vague regarding where they work. It just says that they have to be individuals who reside or are employed in, you know, the 9-member locality. Regarding your staff, we've had some discussions with the RJAC about this, and, you know, we're trying to keep the playing field as level as we possibly can.
Mr. Chair, I move approval of Karen Champ and Amy Morris and Frank Spielberg as appointees to the Technical Advisory Committee.
Thank you, Mayor. Is there a second?
Second.
Okay. Mr. Alcorn made the second. Any further discussion? Seeing and hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? That motion carries, I think, unanimously. And moves us along to item 9, approval of the CMAQ transfer for the city of Alexandria, Monica.
Mr. Chairman, Alexandria has requested a transfer of $430,000 that was allocated in CMAQ money in FY 2020 and $47,568 of previous year CMAQ funds from the purchase of a Dash bus to a new project for Dash scheduling software. This was vetted with the RJAC. They did recommend authority approval.
Mr. Chair. Mr. Wilson.
I move approval of the allocation of congestion mitigation and air quality CMAQ funds for the city of Alexandria.
Second.
Okay, there's a motion by Mr. Wilson, second by Ms. Crystal, to approve the transfer of the CMAQ funds. Any discussion? Seeing and hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? That motion carries unanimously and moves us along to item 10, Governance and Personnel Committee. I think we'll get here some hopefully good things.
Good stuff.
Thank you. Good evening, everyone. It's good to be here.
We're glad you're here.
I'm glad I'm here, too. No idea. So good to be home, we like to say. So it was a good session for the Transportation Authority. It was a team effort. We all worked really well together. Those of you who have full-time liaisons down in Richmond and the business community and myself had a great couple of last 2 weeks of the session, just cementing our ability to partially fill the gap of funding that we wanted to do. As you all know, we did succeed in getting a $50 million annual appropriate designation in the omnibus transportation bill this year, partially through an increase in the grand tourist tax regionally. 10 cents of that comes to us. That's $30 million a year. And then a annual $20 million appropriation out of statewide transportation funds, which also comes to us every year. So 102 we were missing. We got 50 back through the bill. Passed out on the assembly, is now before the governor. It's in the omnibus bill. There will definitely be a number of technical amendments the governor is going to send down on the bill. We are not hearing anything negative out of the administration about what we're getting. They had plenty of opportunity to say something bad about it if they didn't like it, so we're not expecting any change there. So just to recap where we are, there was a loss of 102. As Mike indicated, depending on what the numbers end up being from the state when VDOT reanalyzes what the 81 money was supposed to be, but we were getting at one point, it would be a 3-year phase in, FY 2022, it was going to be $20 million. It's not going to be that. We just don't know where that is. But let's just say it's $18 million for, you know, whatever. Plus we have the 30 from the grantors and the 20 from the Commonwealth Transportation Fund. So plus or minus $68 million will be we've secured so far. And that leaves us plus or minus about $34 million to go. Speaker Philicorn did indicate as they were working through this, and I discussed with you all earlier, that she feels we have another opportunity to just shut the door and finalize our last, whatever the gap is. So I think once we get the new numbers on the 81, then we as a body with our stakeholder community would need to discuss what are our next steps, what is our strategy, what do we want to pursue. Not all money is equal. There are some restrictions when you have statewide money, and we just have to figure out what we're comfortable with. Right now, as it stands, when the governor signs that bill, we will have two dedicated revenue sources, the sales tax and the grantor tax. We will have two statewide sources, the 81 money and the statewide Commonwealth Transportation Fund. So we have a mix of the two sort of sources that you can get money from. And I just think we should think about what our next steps on that are. In full disclosure, there was also a 1% increase in the transient occupancy tax, DOT tax, in the region for two reasons. One, they reduced the 15-cent grantors down to 10, to split it between us and the Metro Capital Fund. And also, those jurisdictions, which were Prince William, Manassas, and Manassas Park, who were getting the 15-cent grantors, it helps sort of mirror that lack of funding for that. So that's how that ended up. And that that COT money for Prince William, Manassas, Manassas Park, two-thirds to be used for public transportation, one-third for any transportation uses. So in terms of directly what our impact is out of the bill, that's it. And again, it was a great team effort by business community, us, and your advocates on the ground. So it worked really well. You might remember another bill that we were advocating for, that Mike and some of the other treasurers worked on, was the expanding the ability to use Fitch rating for investment of public funds. That bill had no problem with before the governor. It passed 100-0 and 40-0 in the House and Senate. Interesting enough, it ended up being a very active session for regional funding and for transportation in General Assembly. Central Virginia, those jurisdictions finally came together and proposed the creation of a Central Virginia Transportation Authority, which did pass. It was an effort led by their local government, and they are using a, like us, the 0.7% sales tax increase, and a local regional gas tax. It used to be 2.1%. All that's being shifted to cents per gallon, so it's 7.6. All of our regional gas taxes are now 7.6, and they're all going to be indexed to CPI.
So the 2.1 goes away?
It goes, well, it's been converted to a cents per gallon.
Not 2.1 rate. Anymore, it's a cents per gallon,
and it's 2.1%. Yes, it is, exactly. And so, those funds are being divided 35% to a newly created authority, 15% to the Greater Richmond Transit Company, and then 50% is going back to the localities for improving mobility, which includes construction, maintenance, or expansion of roads and sidewalks. It's a very varied district, a lot of some urban, but some rural also. So they identified, as you can tell, very different needs than what we identified for what we wanted our authority to do. And then the other new regional funding was the Hampton Roads. You all might remember in 2013, when Hampton Roads received their regional funding, they prohibited its use for transit. And so as a region, there's been a bunch of stakeholders who have been trying to find dedicated transit funding for that region. They succeeded this year in finding that, and they've got three sources, a 6-cent grantor tax, a 1% TOT, and interesting enough, they're getting $20 million each year from state recordation tax revenues. So that money will be programmed by their HR TAP, which is their equivalent of us, but it will be based on the long-range plan developed by their TPO. And the TPO has been asked to bring together all the stakeholders to figure out what are the regional transit needs and prioritize those. And then the other thing is, also in the governor's omnibus bill, all of the regions that don't already have the 2.1, now 7.6 regional fuels tax, and it's Northern Virginia, Hampton Roads, 81 corridor, and now, of course, Central Virginia. Every place else was also, there's also going to impose a 2.7.6 fuels tax. Those funds will go into the Regional Transportation District Fund and be programmed by CTB for those districts. That was really a push by the Senate. They preferred not having the 12-cent statewide gas tax increase, but instead that there be money that could be kept in the region. So that's how the House and Senate kind of split the difference. And again, to go back to what's going on at the state, there will be a 10-cent statewide gas tax increase over 2 years. That'll, at the end of those 2 years, the gas tax will be 27 cents. And then that will be indexed to CPI. And again, this is to be a, the plan is this will be at least a 10-year transition of stabilizing the gas tax as we as a country and a state determine what's the next way that we're going to fund transportation, because cars are more fuel efficient and transit's getting more use. And in that vein, the other funding source that was created is they created what's called a highway user fee based on fuel efficiency / a vehicle miles traveled pilot program. And it's essentially to try to maintain participation in funding transportation by hybrids, electric cars, but also provide a pilot program that DMV is gonna develop for those who want to go ahead and try out a vehicle miles traveled based funding, you know, participation. So that's moving forward. The other big piece, and I think we're going to see a lot of amendments from the governor on this, is the creation of what's called Virginia Passenger Rail Authority. And that is, if you all remember, the big discussion, the big presentation announcement that was made in Arlington over the state's rail transformation plan, the acquisition of not only track, but right away from CSX, the partnership with CSX and Amtrak, also including the Long Bridge project. So they've created an authority. There'll be members from Northern Virginia that will sit on that. Of the 15 of the 12 citizen members, six of them are from the Northern Virginia, either NVTC or CRTC. And they will be the authorities responsible for owning, managing, negotiating, and also probably managing some of the projects related to increasing passenger rail, including Long Bridge. So that got a lot of attention in the General Assembly. The authority's also been authorized to issue up to $1 billion of debt to help pay for the Long Bridge project. The General Assembly added some additional oversight into the process, particularly when it comes to issuing debt, using the eminent domain, buying or selling of particularly real estate assets. So this would be the implementer of all of that rail transformation initiative that we heard about in December. And the last thing I would bring up for us to be involved in is there was a lot of discussion from Secretary of Finance Aubrey Lane and members of General Assembly, a concern about, one, how much debt is being issued by entities that don't really have to come back to the General Assembly to get approval for that debt. And just the concern of, is that debt counting against the state's debt capacity? How do we know? So they've asked Secretary Lane to come together with stakeholders and the Debt Capacity Advisory Committee to take a look at that issue of, you know, not so much looking for approval at this point, but could there be some reporting that comes back to the entities, to the General Assembly and administration, so they kind of understand how much debt is being issued. But they also added language in the conference report that wanted to take a look at transportation debt and if there needed to be a separate debt capacity model run for debt that's related to transportation. Most transportation, or actually all transportation debt, it's kind of like revenue debt. It's debt service comes from a very specific revenue source, whether it's tolls or whether it's regional taxes. It was something that the staff and the Council of Councils looked at in an earlier version of the language, and I think it's something that the authority wants to keep a very close look at. We don't have tax-supported revenues. Our revenues are regional. They're not considered state revenue. And just make sure that we don't get swept under this. So this is probably something we're going to keep a, actually be at the table as a stakeholder as this discussion is taking place.
And I assume that our debt would not be considered to be part of it.
My understanding is that we've never considered debt. It never has been considered state debt. We've never counted against the state debt capacity. But there is some concern about it.
Could you give an example of debt that would be from an entity that would count?
To be perfectly honest, the Hampton Roads HR TAC, they're a very different body. All of their debt, and they issued a lot of debt, close to $2 billion, actually is funding state facilities, state-owned facilities. Our debt, what debt we have issued, is actually going to facilities that are owned by localities. You can look at the innovation stations from Silver Line Phase 2. Or, that's, I mean, I don't think all that debt, do we do anything for any other, but...
Leesburg Park and Ride.
Oh, there you go. So they're facilities owned by, not by the state, they're facilities that aren't owned by the state. In fact, when you think about it, a lot of our funding goes to facilities that aren't owned by the state. They're the regions or they're localities. So we tend to be a lot different than some other entities in that sense. And that may be as much as I know.
Thank you.
Mayor, the question I have, you say the General Assembly is trying to give us a $1 billion debt capacity for the Long Bridge project. Are they?
Well, not us.
Oh.
Not us.
Oh,
no.
Okay.
The Rail Authority.
The Rail Authority
would issue that debt. They've also authorized up to $1 billion debt for the I-81 corridor.
Okay. All right. That's all right.
Okay. Good question. Mr. Wilson.
So what is the, I guess for lack of a better question, what's the problem that we're trying to solve here? I mean, like our debt's not a mystery. We're pretty everyone knows how much we're borrowing and where we're borrowing from. Like, what's the?
To be honest, I don't think the concern is directed at us. We just might get swept in inadvertently.
Okay.
I think the concern is more around the Housing Authority, HR TAC. Frankly, to be perfectly honest, this new Rail Authority was a big concern for a number of members. The brand new authority has no track record. $1 billion of debt capacity being approved for them to issue. So it wasn't about us, but again, the concern, I'm going to be paranoid about it, the concern is that we might get sucked in to something that we don't want to be part of. So it that's the concern, is that there are some entities out there who have been given the authority to issue debt without getting General Assembly approval or buy-in on it.
And I will say, in the language that we're seeing right now, it says so they can make recommendations, and this is why Ms. Boehner says we definitely want to be a part of the process, because as you know, the authority's debt is the authority's debt. It's not on the locality or anyone else. It is solely the debt on the authority. And this is why when we receive state revenues, when the bill is adopted, this is why there is a provision that we cannot issue debt on that money, because they don't want an additional pull, if you will, regarding the state debt capacity. So we want to definitely be at the table. And in talking to Mr. Longy about this, he said the credit rating agencies have a calendar anyway, so they know who is planning to go to the market and when, but we just want to be a part of this. We can't prescribe right now when the authority will be in the bond market next, but I will say one day we will probably be entering the market, and we don't want to have any provisions, especially when the authority's debt is solely the authority's debt.
Mayor Meyer, I was going to ask whether or not any outside auditors had made any notes regarding this question, or was this something that came from the GA members?
It really started with Secretary Lane. He's been concerned about the state's debt capacity. And again, it really comes down to the number of people, who entities that have been authorized to issue debt that don't have to note to him with that position or to the General Assembly. And I think there's a desire to have a better understanding of what exactly is counting against the state debt capacity and in the model. I mean, we know what they've been using in the model, but they're trying to figure out if they need to change what they're counting as part of the model. And if they do, and have to bring more people, other entities in, it's going to change the dynamics of who's got authority to do what.
Okay, I was just wondering whether the bond houses would have already asked from other states that have similar regional or specific authorities.
I haven't heard anything, but there's gotten any negative comments from the rating agency. I just think it's, again, Virginia is always very, like all of you all, very, 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 very careful about its debt, its ratings, its capacity. And the fact of the matter is, I mean, again, we're looking at a billion, just think about it. They just approved $2 billion of debt for transportation, important project, but it's $2 billion. And General Assembly did sign off on it, just admit that, but it raised some eyebrows for some folks. It's a big number in one fell swoop. You usually don't have that number unless it's a general obligation bond and it's gone to the voters for approval. And neither one of these is going
to
do that.
It seems to me they should be concerned about what debt is under in their name.
Yeah.
I'm curious, this rail transformation group that has this new debt capacity, do they have any revenue?
Yes. Well, yes. So they will be getting, I can't remember the number, but essentially what they're getting is 93% of the funds that's coming from the Commonwealth Rail Fund is going to the authority. I don't know what that number is because they're still trying to figure out how much everything is. But for the, well, for example, the debt service for that $1 billion is actually through the MOU they're signing with MBTC for the toll revenue.
In addition, they also have $15 million a year for their Virginia Railway operations for the free to dedicate out of a new fund for Commuter Rail, the CROSS, to create in 2018.
Right. So they're cobbling together, and then they're available, they're eligible to go after federal funds, which they will be doing for Longbridge for sure, and some of the other pieces of the rail transformation. But it's creating an entity that will be able to coordinate all of this and implement the plan. So they don't have a dedicated revenue source, if that's what you're asking. They don't have that. They will be getting a portion of statewide funds plus revenue that their regional, I say Northern Virginia Regional Fund, but it's really dedicated to Longbridge. Their mission is bigger than just Longbridge. It's all of that that's involved with, they'll be implementing the Atlantic Gateway set of projects now, and the third track in Arkandale and all that fun stuff.
I assume that debt would be state debt.
Yes. That's a really interesting question.
Yeah.
I'm trying to remember because at one point, actually the debt language that's in the back end of the omnibus bill actually says it's not state debt.
Wow.
Yeah, Tracy and
in that sense. I mean, again, it's a
Right. Yes, Mr. Chair. I mean, is that actually, so I'm thinking in particular about the revenue sources, for example, 66 tolls. In our jurisdiction, tolls that are backed by something other than the general fund are in fact treated differently, right?
Debt that's not the general fund, yeah.
Right, and so wouldn't that be the case here for the rail authority if you have debt backed by something other than tax revenues from the Commonwealth.
General fund revenues. Yeah, most transportation debt, again, is from dedicated revenue sources,
right.
So it's not general fund revenue. It's not general fund revenue, and so it has traditionally not been seen as debt of the Commonwealth. That's exactly right. It's a transportation thing.
We're still doing this one. I had another question.
I just had to go for it.
could you just, Tracy, you ran through this, I'm
sorry.
This is a little more soon. About the transit occupancy tax increases, so that is Prince William and Manassas only?
So all of Planning District 8, so
okay.
For the Metro Compact members,
yes.
That funding goes to the Metro Capital Fund, which is the State of Good Repair funding.
Got it.
And then for the non-Metro members, it stays with them, and they use it for public transportation.
Wasn't that already something that
was
in legislation?
It was 2%, though. They've increased it to 3%.
Oh, so the money that has already been rerouted.
The two is still going to Metro Capital Fund, yeah.
Okay,
sorry.
Got it.
Yeah.
Well, God willing, our DOTs will not be taking the same kind of hit, but this one
will
take
effect in July.
Yeah.
Oh,
my
God.
Okay.
Yeah. I have six
Would you pay TOT?
You bet.
As you should.
I'm.
Sure. Question, and any other questions, of course, we're going to take up, but I'm curious. I think I know the answer to this, but I want to ask it nevertheless. The $20 million that's in the bill.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, beside, I assume.
Right.
The bill, the 20. Is that for 2 years or is that?
It's every year, it's annual.
It's an annual appropriation.
It's ours.
What I was hoping to hear and thought I would. Mr. Chair, I have one question.
Yes, sir.
We talked about this last time, we also talked about the safety.
Yes, so it was.
Five of them, but yeah. Some of them didn't do so well, and a couple were passed. So.
Yeah, as you all recall from last month, we were talking that there were, and this already supported, the governor had proposed five improvements for safety. There's been a great concern at the state. And they've done a lot of work with CTB to have a more comprehensive and strategic plan to improve safety in the system, particularly to try to address the issue of fatalities. Virginia says traffic fatalities have been going up, which is not the way you want it to go. And so there were things ranging from the idea of, again, hands-free being a primary offense, so that did pass as a standalone bill. They also had identified, well, there was an open container, open alcoholic container provisions that they tried to get adopted, and that failed for lack of wanting to put a recorked bottle of wine in a trunk. Just going to say that out loud. Probably the one that was most distressing for a number of members on the floor was making wearing of seat belts for everyone in a vehicle as a primary offense. Right now it's a requirement of the front seat passenger and the driver, and it's a secondary offense. And it got caught up in some concerns about essentially bad traffic stops by public safety. I mean, yes, that's the only way I can put it. Because even though with both hands-free and this, there were provisions to develop some training for public safety and then data tracking for who was stopped and why they were stopped and all of that. Well, that worked for hands-free. It wasn't enough for the seatbelt provisions, and so they died. But included in that bill was a provision that would allow local governments to reduce speed limits and target at residential or commercial areas from 25 to no less than 15 miles per hour as you needed it. And that also died when they killed the bill for that had the seatbelt as primary. They did get through provisions to allow speed cameras on certain congested highway corridors, which is always, again, a little difficult sometimes to get through because it's not a handheld camera, it's a remote camera, and there's a little concern about that. But that did pass. So hands-free, the speed cameras. There were some improvements made in legislation that dealt with essentially the intersection of vehicles and pedestrians and vehicles and bikes, and that in legislation did pass. One was to lower the bar of evidence required when a car has essentially hit a bike or pedestrian in the bike lane, so that passed. That was Senator Servo. And then there were bills that made it clear that pedestrians have the right of way. They're in the crosswalk. You cannot hit them. Just don't do it. Which came to home to a lot of us because Loudoun County lobbyist was hit in Richmond. She was in the crosswalk, had the light, and a car plowed into her. She's okay, but it really hit home for a lot of us who never went very well. So it wasn't 100% on the safety. I just like the last couple of days is when the seatbelt provisions and the numbers that the administration gave. So Virginia's seatbelt uses around 83-85%, but more than half of the traffic fatalities are not wearing the seatbelt. Did I get that right, Mary?
Yeah.
And that's what they're trying to get at. It's the a lot of people are wearing their seatbelts. Who could like it higher? But the fact that more than 50% of your fatalities are not wearing your seatbelt, that's what they were trying to address. So, yeah.
All right. Some progress.
Thank you.
Mr. Maynard, thank you.
Oh, thank you.
There's a great challenge whenever you go down to Richmond, but you come back and you've got a smile on your face, so that's a good challenge.
It's hysteria.
Okay, we're going to move along to item number 11, project status update. We've got a change here.
Mr. Chairman, I just want to be brief. You know, with 94 projects having 121 standard project agreements, we do have the project status update that's an attachment to the executive director's report each month. We know, we recognize we were killing a lot of trees trying to make copies of the project status update report. So moving forward, especially since we're in the process of updating your six-year program, so the number 94 projects that you have currently underway, that is going to increase. Moving forward, we're only going to note significant changes to the project status update, including modifications to the standard project agreement, modification to appendices A and B, project administration, start completion dates, groundbreaking and ribbon cutting ceremonies. We will, however, keep the longer version of this project status update report on the website, but for printing purposes, we just wanted to do our part. So if you notice in the attachment this evening, you will see a one pager compared to, I don't know, 20 to 30 pages that we were printing previously. So we did want to draw your attention to that, but you can find the more detailed report on the website.
So the complete one is on the website.
It is, it is.
Could we have a link provided every month?
Sure, we can
I've
do that.
I've saved every single one. This enormous
folder. No, we can definitely do that because we do try to highlight the changes. Sometimes there are no changes, sometimes there are changes, but just to make sure we're focusing on the significant changes, we'll have the one-sheeter, but the elongated report will be on the website, and we can include the link in the material.
So this one's there now?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
And the long one.
Oh, the long one?
Yeah, the long one is on the website as well.
If you go to the home page, where is it?
Where is Erica? There is a funding page that lists out all the projects we're funding so far. So if you go up to funding at the top, it will link you over and we update that each month.
And I'll we'll send that to you.
Okay, thank you. So yeah, it's this print there with the interactive map.
Monica, just a quick question. I'm hoping that looking at this correctly, you have no concern, based upon this change, you have no concern that a project that might not be moving along as it should will get lost in the...
No, we're not concerned because even though you won't see the long version printed out in the packet, we will see it. And that we track it and have quarterly project meetings based on that.
Any thoughts, any concerns? Okay, very good. On to the Finance Committee report or update. Let me just say that I made some of those comments earlier with regard to the budgets, each of the three budgets. So let me call on Mike Maloney to add any thoughts he might have with regard to investments and monthly revenue report, operating budget report. Otherwise, you all have seen it.
Just a quick note on investments, since the authority does have a $1 billion investment portfolio. 11-year bull run is over. The bears are out. As we've said numerous times, the Finance Committee has heard it more than the full authority. With a high-quality fixed income portfolio, your returns are going to eventually run to the market. What we try to do is delay that in the down market as much as possible, and we've done a very good job of that. We try to be in as good a position as possible when the bears go back into hibernation and the bulls come back out, so that we can start getting the benefit of a better market as soon as possible. But with our fixed income position, the high quality that we keep, some of the horror stories that you're hearing on Wall Street, they're mostly related to equities. The treasuries are taking an absolute beating. They're talking about 0% treasuries in the future. We will not lose principal. Okay, we'll try to keep the return as high as possible. And more to come as we do the run.
Thank you. Any thoughts or questions? Mr. Chair, please. Mike could keep us advised. I know that's a very volatile situation right now, and any predictions that are had are extremely risky. Can you let us know if we're really starting to see, you know, some damage to our investments?
Well, again, with fixed income, our investments shouldn't be damaged. And what will happen is, as the stuff that we purchased prior to the market slide matures off, we will have no choice but to replace it with a much lesser earning instrument. In a zero market environment, we will park the cash in a bank versus buying treasuries or something that lock in that zero, close to zero rate for an extended amount of time. We've had very good relationships with the community banks. We did a report on that to the Finance Committee. As far as watching it, we report the performance Monday to the Finance Committee, and we'll obviously keep doing that. But our portfolio is so high quality, and our investment policy requires it to be of such high quality, we will not face just market losses. We won't do anything imprudent like starting to sell out of the portfolio where you're actually locking your losses or something like that. We'll ride it down. Once the market starts to come back up, we'll try to be on that upswing as soon as possible. But where we had returns of 20 million, we cut it back to 10.5, thinking that was going to be the worst case scenario. That was in February. Worst case scenario got a lot worse in March. So we'll probably have to revise that down some more.
Dave, the Finance Committee sees that every time we meet in February. And I'm certain that the staff will make sure we see it. Good question. Mr. Alford?
Good question. So do we have a policy about yields? I mean, staying away from any investments? Because we may see that.
Yeah, the U.S. has not had negative yields, so it's not in the policy. But that was my reference to, we'll park it in the bank first. Yeah. We will not make investments at negative yields.
Okay. If we get into negative yield territory, we have a lot of flight to quality in the right now. So I encourage you to bring it back to the Finance Committee for that discussion.
Okay, very good. Item number 13, Planning and Programming Committee Report, Mr. Wilson.
Yes, I do not need to read.
That's a short report.
Yes. I'm already done. I do not need to read the memo that you have before us. The committee met the first time with the new membership on March 2nd. We talked about the 6-year plan, we talked about the transaction. We spent a fair amount of time talking about the calendar, and then we spent a lot of time meeting. We need to meet May 4th. Thank you very much.
Outstanding report.
Thank you.
All right, very good. 14 and 15, of course, are very short. Those reports are in your paperwork, and I'd like to move on past them to item 16, the executive director's report.
Mr. Chairman, the only thing I would like to highlight is yesterday we held our fifth annual Northern Virginia ITS Transportation Roundtable here in this room. This was the second year in a row that the event was sold out. We did have 7 authority members on hand, and Mr. Snyder actually served on our first panel, which asked the question, is the DC metro region ready for connected autonomous share and electric vehicles? But we had yourself, Mayor Parrish, there, Mayor Rischel, Ms. Hines, Mr. Cole, Ms. Torvo, Chair Wheeler, and again, Mr. Snyder served on the first panel. The second panel, we discussed from a private industry side. We wanted them to provide a perspective on the private industry side regarding transportation technology. We got a lot of positive feedback to the point we are not certain if we can hold the event here in this room next year just because it's sold out and it's selling out quickly and we do have to turn people away. But I would like to say thank you. This has been something that's getting better and better with each year.
I'd like to say that Mr. Snyder did an outstanding job as a member of the group. Thank you very much for that as you continue to chair the committee as well.
And I'd just like to thank all the authority members, and especially Monica and Keith and others who really did the work of finding the people in the private sector. And I do think this is something that this group, at some point, when it's more, you know, sort of developed, really we ought to figure out the role that we want this to play and how we want to weave it into our plans. Because I think there's tremendous upside, but like anything, it's going to take some focus. So, anyway, thanks.
Okay.
That is all.
That's it? Okay.
Could I make one positive, not one positive, that Monica in her report talked about a presentation she made to the World Bank. And we, it's really exciting that she's recognized in that way. And on my day job, I do some work with the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, which is pretty much deals with global issues. They have an infrastructure committee, and they put out recommendations for global best practices for infrastructure planning. And when you put what we do up against those best practices, we are there in every single way. And I'm glad that Monica had an opportunity to represent us in a global forum.
And thanks to them, Mr. Snyder. It was very interesting because, of course, it's the World Bank, so they're representing other countries and other parts of the world in trying to find ways to finance transportation infrastructure. And they were like, oh, gosh, the authority, you are so far ahead. And I'm like, no, really, no. But they said we're really advanced, and Mr. Snyder is spot on regarding the Organization for Cooperative and Economic Development. They had these, I think it was 12 target areas, and they are in draft. But when we reviewed the target areas, the authority, we are hitting each of those target areas. And it was very, very interesting because they really are invested in what the authorities are doing. They wanted to know, how did you get the funding? How do you arrive at the performance metrics? How do you make the decisions? It was really great for the authority. So thank you.
Okay, very good. We are right at the end of the meeting tonight. I'm going to only speak here another couple of minutes. I want to make sure that you all have the opportunity to speak about anything that you'd like as well. In fact, at the end of every regularly scheduled city council meeting, I ask the council members, is there anything to come before the council for the good of our citizens? So I'll do the same thing in just a moment. But first, let me say that those of you on the finance committee, take off the 19th of March meeting. We're going to cancel that meeting. And also, for all authority members, April 16th, we're going to cancel that meeting. Our next meeting will be on the 14th of May, the night that we have a public hearing. Unless you all have an argument with either of those. Okay. Anything else?
Mr. President, you should be in charge tomorrow.
You make that motion. I would ask, and a lot of the town chief here, I would ask Ms. Backman to, when she next speaks with the chair, Chair Randall, who missed tonight because of some budget discussions taking place. My thanks for allowing me to chair. We're adjourned.